Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians lose 2 of 3 over the weekend to the Braves, but really it looked like, you know, they could really hang with this team, one of the better teams in the National League East, one of the best teams in baseball in terms of record. And they had the series won. They had it in their grasp on Sunday afternoon before letting it slip away.
Yeah, Joe, I'm kind of wrestling with how to take this series. You know, they get handled Friday night pretty easily. They come back and win a great game Saturday, 4-2 in 11 innings. And then for 7 innings, they've beaten the Braves 3-1 Sunday with their hustle, their base stealing, their, you know, timely hitting, their pitching. And then, Joe, I've seen collapses before. I've done this for 42 years, but I have never seen a self-inflicted collapse like we saw in the 10th inning yesterday. And, you know, it kind of obviously put a damper on the series. But like you were saying, they did go toe-to-toe with these guys. I think they showed they certainly can hang with the upper echelon of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that was really sort of making a statement to themselves as much as anybody else in the league or anybody else watching, you know, going out there and, you know, 2 extra inning games, both of which, you know, Saturday's game they won, but and needed the extraordinary effort to do so. But Sunday's game, they were in control and command, and they did what, you know, any young team would do. And again, they're getting away from the time when we can, you know, attribute a lot of these mistakes maybe to a lot of that youth, except for a few guys on the roster. They've been doing this since 2022, so they should have a little bit more know-how, a little bit more experience. Stephen Kwan should know better than to run into, you know, the outs that he ran into and what they did on the bases, and we'll get into that here in a minute. But, you know, just going back to Saturday's game, obviously, you know, we'll touch on Tanner Bibee and his performance and what that meant to him in terms of his confidence. But the one guy I want to ask you about right off the top is Hunter Gaddis. Have we checked in on Hunter Gaddis? How's he doing on Monday morning after the weekend that he had 2 eighth inning leads of 2 runs and 2 blown hold opportunities for Hunter Gaddis. This was a guy who hadn't given up a run all year, and then the wheels come off on Saturday night and then again on Sunday. I kind of get what Stephen Vogt was trying to do, getting him in there back in the eighth inning on Sunday. You know, you fall off the bike, you want to get right back on. You know, what did you see out of Hunter Gaddis, and is there any concern about him, you know, being shaken now?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Joe. I do not know. And, you know, this is a guy that, like you said, what, he had 11 and two-thirds scoreless innings, maybe 15 over 15 scoreless innings going back to last year, consecutive scoreless innings. And then he blows consecutive saves in the eighth inning Saturday and Sunday. You know, they were fortunate to come back and win this Saturday's game, but that didn't happen Sunday. You know, Joe, I think he's at a crossroads, really. You know, it's kind of silly to say. I mean, it sounds silly to say that, but, you know, this is really his first year full time as an eighth inning guy, as a reliever. And, you know, he's been used a lot. They've gone to the well with him a lot. And we're going to have to see, you know, is he going to need a couple days off? Is he going to need, just a reboot? Or does he just shake this off and comes back, you know, Tuesday night against the Astros? You know, it's the first real big test he's getting as a reliever, as a kind of a leverage reliever. And we've got to see how he responds.
The one thing that we do know is that this won't be his only big test as a leverage reliever. There will be multiple, you know, ups and downs like this throughout the season. We saw this with Trevor Stephan, you know, when he first emerged as the eighth inning guy, as the setup guy. To Emmanuel Clase, you know, he wasn't lights out, you know, perfect every game. He was darn close to it in that 2022 season. So, you know, we'll see how Hunter Gaddis responds. Obviously, that'll be a big storyline for the Houston series, depending on how much he gets used. But overall, the bullpen, even though they did blow their a couple of leads there in the Atlanta series, for the most part, they performed pretty well.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, Nick Sandlin gets his first career save on Saturday. He's pitching in front of family and friends, and you know, did a great, you know, 1-2-3, 11th inning. I thought Scott Barlow was like a magician out there, Joe. He
Yes.
keeps getting out of jams. In the on Saturday, he gets out of a bases loaded, no out jam in the 10th, and they don't score. And then he pitches out of a, you know, I think he pitched out of trouble against Sunday. So yeah, there were some moments there. Class A looked okay Saturday, gave it up Sunday. Yeah, the bullpen as a whole is still pitching really well.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to got to continue to be one of the strengths of this team as they move forward, because you're not going to get a 7-inning outing like you did out of Tanner Bibee, 7 innings, 9 strikeouts every time out of this rotation. But it was great to see Tanner Bibee step up and deliver when he did, basically on the biggest stage against a tough opponent, Charlie Morton, for the Braves. Just a, you know, one of the best games that we've seen Tanner Bibee pitch.
Yeah, definitely. He was fired up for it, and he pitched like it. Seven scoreless innings, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. He threw 73% of his pitches for strikes, Joe. I think that was the key. In his fought his five previous starts, you know, he's been in and out of the strike zone. His pitch count has ran was you know it got inflated, and Saturday, he only threw 91 pitches in 7 innings. I think that's right where you want to be. That's how efficient he was. It was a four-seam fastball, that he really used a lot. And he was really that was the Tanner Bibee that we saw from last season.
Yeah, so much of Tanner Bibee being effective has to do with his confidence going out there, and you know this outing, this performance has to do just wonders for that. I think as he goes forward, this could be the start of one of those you know runs where he puts together consecutive outings with scoreless or whatever, just sort of being the guy that we saw for long stretches last year. As a rookie, and looks like he finally got his legs under him after a couple of starts this year. Speaking of confidence, maybe overconfidence, I don't know what it is. The Guardians seem to be a little they need a little bit more self-actualization. They need to realize maybe what they can and can't do on the bases right now, because it is a it's not a great situation. They had that game won until they ran themselves out of it on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Joe, I still don't understand it. Where was Kwan going? What was he's at second base. There's one out. You got your two best hitters coming to the plate in Ramirez and Naylor, and he's off and running and gets picked off. I mean, it wasn't even close. So, and he, I give Kwan credit. He owned up to it. He said he was just over aggressive, trying to do too much. And then Jose Ramirez, the best base runner on the team, follows him up by trying to steal second, I guess, to get in scoring position for Naylor. But and he gets tagged out. He doesn't even slide. It was a bizarre ending to a really kind of a riveting game.
Yeah, stuff that we don't really expect to see. Jose Ramirez not sliding in that situation. That's a no-brainer. There must have been a disconnect there. As far as the Kwan situation, that wasn't the first time he had gotten picked off stealing a base in the game. He had also tried to go, I believe it was a lefty as well, that he was trying to steal on earlier in the game and got picked off and tagged out. Is this a matter of maybe paralysis by analysis? They thought they had something in the game plan that they saw, and he was going on first movement, and maybe Atlanta caught them with maybe a little bit of a decoy there, or was this, like you said, just Kwan being over aggressive?
Yeah, I think, Kwan said there was a plan. Especially in the 11th inning, or I mean, I should say the 10th inning, that they had a plan. They were looking for a certain situation. You know, Stephen Vogt said AJ Minter, you know, had the exact same cadence in his, you know, in his delivery to the batter before. They tried to time him up, and you know, Atlanta kind of, you know, caught him napping, you know, just counter moved with the inside move to second base. And Kwan was, you know, Kwan was out by 30 feet. It was no contest. And then he got caught again for the first time in the seventh inning, Joe, you know, really, you know, picked, you know, after he singles to drive in to give him a 3-1 lead. And then, you know, he gets, you know, gets thrown out trying to steal second base to end that inning. So, it's just, you know, they were mistakes of aggression. I guess you can live with that, but you can live with one or two aggressive mistakes, Joe. You can't live with, you know, they got caught four times last night stealing base. You can't do that. That's just, you know, sometimes, yeah, you know, being aggressive is part of their game. Stephen Vogt talks about causing chaos on the bases, putting pressure on the other team. But you know, somebody has to have the stop switch here. Somebody has to flash the red light now and then, and we're going to have to see how they react to this.
Right, and we had seen it earlier in the game. Chadwick Tromp, the Atlanta catcher, was not having a good game. He was, you know, pass balls, balls in the dirt, you know, balls that he wasn't blocking correctly to try and keep things in front of him. There were opportunities there to sort of push the issue and be aggressive. I mean, Jose Ramirez, you know, had what taken a base just on reading, making a good read on a ball in the dirt. So, you know, just those little things. Yeah, that's all great. But again, I go back to the idea of Terry Francona when Jose first came up and, you know, he got picked off at first base as a rookie. And he asked him, you know, what do you think, you're invisible out there? that don't think. Do you think they don't see you when you're trying to steal? So obviously the same sort of situation with Kwan. Aggression is great, but when it costs you in big situations like that, you really got to reevaluate it. And you know, we didn't even mention like Josh Naylor is like the poster boy for this. It's like. He somehow thinks that he can just be out there stealing bases, and that he's, you know, Usain Bolt in terms of, you know, his speed on the bases. He's been thrown out trying to take bases like that, more times than we can count this season. So, just, you know, they've got to do a better job, I think, of knowing themselves, first, before they, you know, sort of put it into practice on the bases. As far as the game on Saturday, like we said, Tanner Bibee, you know, great coming out there and his outing and his effort. But Josh Naylor in the clutch, this guy after the seventh inning at the plate is a guy that nobody wants to see if you're an opposing team, against Cleveland.
Yeah, Joe, in the 11th inning Saturday, I loved it. You know, they intentionally walked Ramirez to get to Naylor. You know, Naylor's sitting there, you know, he knew they were going to walk Ramirez with first base open. He knew he wanted to be in that situation. First pitch, doubled down the line, the right field line. And, you know, that opens up what a 2-run inning. They win the game 4-2. You hear a lot of players say, I want that situation. I want to be the guy. I want to be step up with the game on the line. But I think Naylor really believes that. He is convinced that he, you know, he is the guy to do this to carry the Guardians to get the big hit. And he's done it time after time over the last 2 years. And you know, when he's up there, you know, you can see why he's so confident.
And go back to, you know, those the game in Chicago where he had the 8 RBIs after the eighth inning or, you know, whatever. And, you know, the phrase that he kept repeating when he got back to the dugout in his crazed, you know, helmet throwing, whatever, He said he wants all the smoke. That's sort of the mantra for him, I think, is, you know, he wants that burden, that responsibility, all of that on his shoulders, and he believes that he can carry the club, and then that's a great thing to see, and we're seeing it even more developed this year, I think, than we have in the past. He wants to be up in that box, and that's a great thing for the Guardians. As far as you know, what this series means moving forward for Cleveland, obviously, had a chance to take 2 out of 3 from basically the team with the best record in the National League. They fall short of that, but they sort of show themselves, hey, you know, we can hang. What does that mean confidence-wise going into Houston now as they take on a team that's historically given them a lot of problems?
Yeah, well, we won't really know until we see how they react against the Astros. But I think it's got to give them, just from, you know, kind of taking the pulse in the locker room, I think it gave them confidence that, okay, we let one slip away. We gave Sunday's game away, but we were right there in all three of those games. We should be that should be a confidence boost. But you know, the problems on this club, you know, haven't changed. They still have to get deeper into games with their starting rotation. They still have to maybe, you know, protect, you know, a couple of their relievers to see how they react to this Houston series. And they still have to continue to be aggressive on the bases, but to do so with a little more, you know, a little more you know, just intelligence, baseball IQ. You know, you always hear about baseball IQ and this team, you know, so far until Sunday has registered has a high grade in that category. Sunday was just maybe a freak, but they have to keep playing aggressive baseball, but intelligent baseball. They have to pitch deep into games, and they have to continue to get, you know, timely hitting.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think I'm gonna throw this out there, Hoynesy, and I know it's gonna sound like I'm talking crazy or whatever, but is it maybe time to make a move on the player side of things? You know, obviously the pitching side, you're getting closer to getting Sam Hentges back. There's gonna be moves made in the bullpen within the next probably you know, 2 weeks or so. But this Guardians club is, I think, one of the only teams in the American League that's kept the same 13 position players since day one, the opening day roster. They're all still the same 13 position players, and we know that Kyle Manzardo is tearing it up down in AAA. Is maybe making a move to get another bat in there to inject some sort of energy that way. So I mean, that's something that you're talking about after you've lost 3 in a row, not just you know, splitting up a series against one of the National League's best, but could maybe a change in that direction, you know, boost this team somehow.
Yeah, I think right now, Joe. Yeah, I think they're considering it, but you know, I think what the service time element, I think, plays into this, don't you think? You know, I think there's probably a date in mind where they can bring Manzardo up without losing, you know, with you know, extending his stay in Cleveland, you know, by, you know, getting the extra year after he would be eligible after 6 seasons for free agency. So you know, maybe that plays into it. And you know, DH and first base, Manzardo's, you know, two positions. You know, that hasn't been a problem with this club. You know, they're both, you know, they both positions have produced well, and you know, Josh Naylor especially at first base. So is there a crying need for Manzardo? I don't think so, but you know, who knows 2 weeks from now.
Well, and do you risk, you know, upsetting the apple cart if you bring Manzardo up? We know that Josh Naylor, you know, is an emotional guy. You're essentially bringing up a guy who plays both of the same positions as him. You know, you don't want to mess with team chemistry in that way, but I could see something like that happening. You talk about DH and first base having been a problem, but you know, there's areas where you could improve that. Esteban Florial and Ramon Laureano haven't exactly been tearing it up. in those spots when they've been in the lineup as a DH and you know in right field or wherever they get a chance to play. You know, maybe a guy who's, you know, got a much better OPS than both of them combined down in AAA could make a difference there. Plus, I think a lot of people just really want to see him.
Yeah, I think, but if you bring him up, Joe, you're not going to bring him up to come off the bench, right? I don't think.
Right.
If you bring him up, he's got to be the full-time DH, and you got to, you know, switch off between him and Naylor maybe once or twice a week, right? So, you know, you've got to take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, but also with this lineup and with the flexibility of this roster that Stephen Vogt has shown, yeah, if you're not starting, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not playing every game.
Yeah,
We've
that's
seen a
true.
lot of guys. He's done a really good job of making sure nobody is sort of sitting there rotting on the pine. And I think that there's opportunities where you'd be able to get him in there. Teams continue to try to stick to this load up on left-handers against the Guardians. For the most part, it really hasn't worked. I think Friday night's loss was their first loss to a left-handed starter this season, if I'm not completely
Yeah, you're
mistaken.
right. They're 6-1 against left-handed starters.
So I mean, yeah, I see these teams are still trying to stick to that. The Guardians are proving it to not be the case. So maybe you bring in a lefty and you send out, I mean, if you've got to send out a lefty bat, maybe you part ways with Florial, who knows, or Laureano. You got to give him a few more days, a little bit more time to sort of justify having to swallow the, what, $6 million that he's making. So
Yeah.
who knows? But, you know, maybe that's a move that's coming. We haven't seen it. I know that if a move is imminent, if something's pending, our subtext subscribers are the first ones to hear about it. You can sign up for Guardian Subtext. It's our subscription texting service, $3.99 a month, by going to cleveland.com/guardians, or I'm sorry, it's cleveland.com/subtext, or sending a text message to 216-208-4346. Hoynesy, you know, you're in Houston, obviously a day off today. How badly does this team sort of need that break to sort of reset right now?
Yeah, I think they do need a break, Joe. I mean, it's always welcome. You know, it's better to have an off day at home than on the road. But still, you know, it's a good break after, you know, an emotional series. That felt that, you know, that week last week, the past weekend in Atlanta. You know, three sellout crowds of over 40,000. You know, it is a beautiful ballpark. It had that. Not playoff intensity, but pretty close to it. The fans were into it, the teams were into it. So you think, you know, you get a Monday's a chance to catch your breath. You know, that bullpen certainly needs a day off, and you know, and get back at it against a Houston team that has really, you know, dominated the postseason for the last 6, 7, 8 years, but is struggling a little bit this year. You're not catching them. You're catching them kind of at a down period. So, you know, if you're ever gonna make a dent against the Astros, this is probably it.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity. I meant to ask you about the atmosphere and the feeling there and what it's like. Obviously, this is another new ballpark for you to cross off your list. I think it might be the last ballpark for you to have to cross off your list. In terms of this, it went up in 2017. So the last time the Guardians or Cleveland played in Atlanta was 2016. So, you know, really for a lot of you guys, it's the first time being there and new opportunities. What'd you think of the location? I hear that they've got like a whole like district built up around it, and it's you know, sort of really nice. You said the crowds were sold out, 40,000 a night there for the you know, the that sort of playoff atmosphere. You know, just what'd you think of Truist Park?
Yeah, beautiful ballpark, gorgeous, and like the surrounding area is filled with, you know, shops, bars, restaurants. You know, Joe, every night it was it was like being in a college town. You know, you were walking around after the games. People are still, you know, walking around, going to restaurants, going to bars, having fun. You know, and you were able to walk back to the hotel. It was a nice setting, and I'm sure every major league owner, when they get a look at this place, and see what a new ballpark can look like, and what the kind of the ancillary, facilities around the ballpark can mean to the team and the city and the income from the team. I mean, they probably all want that, I would think. And the thing that shocked me was, this place has been open since 2017. For some reason, I thought it just opened, so it's, but this is, this was the Guardians' first trip there, and also my first trip there. So yeah, like I checked that box, Joe.
Check it off the list for sure. Yeah, I all the revenue that's generated by the shops and the venues and everything around there that the Braves own doesn't have to get shared with the other teams in the league. That's not subject to revenue sharing in terms of that. So you know why they're able to go out there and compete in the free agent market with the, and bringing guys like Matt Olson and pay guys like Ronald Acuna Jr. So, also another thing that's just different about Atlanta between Atlanta and Cleveland. All right, Hoynes, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll check back in with you from Houston tomorrow ahead of the series opener, and we'll get the lowdown on the Astros then. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.